This is the last day of this January 2013 Rohatsu 7-day session. Our koan this morning will be from the Blue Cliff Record. This is number 4. Deshan carries his bundle. Deshan is known in Japan as Toksan, but we'll, since it's not an impossible Chinese name to pronounce correctly, I'll use the Chinese Deshan, and he'll be meeting up with yesterday's Guishan, also in Japan known as Isan. When Deshan came to Guishan's temple, he carried his pilgrim's bundle with him into the Buddha hall, where he crossed from east to west and from west to east. Guishan sat quietly doing zazen. Looking around, Deshan said, "Nothing, nothing," and went out. Secho comments, "Completely exposed." Deshan got to the monastery gate, but then said to himself, "I shouldn't be so rude." So he re-entered the hall in the prescribed manner for the meeting. As Guishan sat there, Deshan, holding up his kneeling cloth, said, "Master." Guishan made as if to take up his ceremonial whisk, whereupon Deshan shouted, "Cuts!" and left with a sweep of his sleeves. Secho comments, "Completely exposed." Deshan, turning his back on the hall, put on his straw sandals and left. That evening, Guishan asked the head monk, "Where is that newcomer?" The head monk replied, "When he went out, he turned his back on the Buddha hall, put on his straw sandals and departed." Guishan said, "Hereafter, that fellow will go to the summit of an isolated peak, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs." Secho comments, "Adding frost to snow." So, Guishan, for people who are listening to this by podcast or whatever, yesterday we met up with Guishan in a koan in the Mumon Khan. Guishan kicks over the water bottle, and we read about his some material on him, so I'll dispense with that here and go straight to the other guy, Deshan. He's one of the most colorful, illustrious of the great Chinese masters of the Tang Dynasty. He figures in quite a few koans, in various collections of koans. He lived mainly in the 9th century. When he was young, he did a thorough study of the rules of the Vinaya, the monastic rules and regulations, and then also became an authority on the Diamond Sutra. And he earned the nickname Diamond Zhao. Sort of extemporaneously here, he became so well known for his mastery of the Diamond Sutra as an academic, as a scholar, that he became the authority on the Diamond Sutra, and he was happy to play the role, or to be that authority. And the story of Deshan as an adult begins with him. hearing about the Zen school, the Chan school. Remember, he wasn't in Chan at this point. He was a sutra master. Hearing about the Chan school and that they said this teaching beyond words and letters without reliance on the sutras, his precious sutras. And it infuriated him. And he also heard that the Chan school, they talk about reaching Buddhahood in this lifetime. And that made him even madder. And he made up his mind that he was going to go down there, said somewhere, and raid their den and exterminate the lot of them. So he set off with his precious Diamond Sutras, all the commentaries on his back. And when he was well on his way to the south, that's where Chan was big at the time, is in the south of China. And he met up with this old woman selling refreshments, pastries along the road. Here it is, the actual words of what made him angry before he went on his trip. Those who leave home may study the great meaning of Buddhism for 1,000 kalpas and spend a further 10,000 kalpas performing detailed Buddhist practice, yet they still won't become a Buddha. How dare those southern devils say that just by pointing at the human mind, one can see self-nature and attain Buddhahood? I'll drag them from their caves and exterminate their ilk, thus repaying the kindness of the Buddha. It's a great agent of the Buddha. Actually, he did become a great agent of the Buddha. But at this point, he still is caught in this notion that to reach Buddhahood takes thousands of lifetimes and more. And this must have been very threatening to him, to his whole the paradigm that he had lived his life by and that he had invested so much in. So then he set off with these commentaries of the Diamond Sutra on his back, and then he came upon this old woman selling. Here the translation is dim sum, but elsewhere they say pastries. But anyway, this is the thing about the Chinese language. It is so imprecise with these characters, and it's fascinating how different the translations can be of the same text. With koan translations, it's quite sobering to sometimes not be sure exactly what they're talking about. So he stopped to rest, must have been in weeks out on his journey, and he bought... all right, let's stick here. I'm reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. Let's go with his translation, dim sum. And so he bought some dim sum, and the old woman pointed at his bundle of scrolls, the Diamond Sutra, and said, "What are those books?" And he said, "They're commentaries on the Diamond Sutra, my woman, good woman." And she said, first he says, they're the such and such commentaries. "What sutra do they expound on?" she asked. He said, "Well, the Diamond Sutra." And then she says, "Why, I have a question for you, if you don't mind." And you could see him looking down at her and saying, "Well, go ahead, man." He was in a easy, tolerant mood, having his dum sum. And she said, "If you answer my question right, I'll donate the dumpling to you. If you can't answer, then you must go somewhere else." "Now, here's my question," she says. "In the Diamond Sutra it says, past mind cannot be attained. Present mind can't be attained. Future mind can't be attained. I want to know, monk, what mind are you revealing right now? And to that, Daishan was speechless. Probably for the first time in his life, he was speechless. Which tells you that he was already, his mind was ready. If he had just been just lost in discursive thought and attached to all of his knowledge, he would have tread water and come up with some kind of something or other. But he was left speechless. And then he went to I'm going to skip through this somewhat fast. He went to Master Lung Tan, and he challenged him, and they sat down and deep into the night discussing the Diamond Sutra. And finally, the Master Lung Tan, this is now a Chan master, so Daishan has found his quarry, and Lung Tan said, "It's getting late, you should go now." Daishan was about to leave, and he turned and said, "It's dark outside." And then this is when Lung Tan lit a candle and reached out to hand it to Daishan, and just as Daishan reached to take it, Lung Tan blew it out. And at that, Daishan experienced deep enlightenment. The next day, he took all of his commentaries on the Diamond Sutra, put them in a pile in front of the Dharma Hall. He lifted up a candle and said, "All the mysterious doctrines are but a speck of dust in a vast void. All the great affairs of the world are but a drop of water cast into a boundless chasm." And then he torched all the books. So, this is the core experience of enlightenment, is seeing the formlessness of form. And suddenly all of his commentaries and his sutras he saw as nothing. Fundamentally nothing. It must have been absolutely stunning to him. And with all of this literature that he had spent his whole life studying, that suddenly he saw clean through it. Just as he must have seen clean through everything, all phenomena. All things he suddenly saw as essentially nothing. Not nothing in the negative sense, not worthless, but without any ultimate substance to them. And this was a deep experience. From everything we can tell, what's come down to us. And we've already seen from a little glimpse at his personality that he was a rough and bumptious and arrogant guy. He had that distinctive arrogance of the intellectual, the probably brilliant intellectual who goes through life impatient with others and wondering why people can't converse with people at his level. And I'll refrain from reading any more about any more material on him because it would all be after this encounter in today's koan. Save it for another teisho because he's in so many teishos. Here he's not the master. He's the swaggering monk who is fresh out of his great enlightenment experience. This is what is so puzzling about awakening is that it can leave us with this pride. It seems completely contradictory. If you've seen into the emptiness of all phenomena, you've seen through the ego, the self, the illusory nature of it, how can there be this pride in having attained something? Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but at least with deeper awakening experiences, it seems to be quite common. Not so much with the little more tenuous first kenshos that people have, but this was we could call not just kensho but satori. I've spoken so often from this seat about this phenomenon of the residual pride after awakening, where one hasn't yet integrated that insight into the emptiness, hasn't integrated into one's being, and so there's this lag where there's this contradiction. These are habit forces, of course. We're talking about the force of karmic tendencies. One master said, "The wind ceases, but the waves still surge." So then, right out of this enlightenment, Deshan continues on his way, and then he comes to the temple of the famous Guishan. Guishan, who was just the head cook at a monastery in yesterday's koan, but now, it's many years later, this is the very monastery that he had been sent to after kicking over that water bottle, but now he no doubt had hundreds of monks and had become well known. And now Deshan had him in his crosshairs. So when he got to Guishan's temple, he had his bundle of clothes and carried them right into the Buddha hall with him. This would be the first breach of convention to take his stuff into the Buddha hall with him. And then he strode from east to west and from west to east. And certainly he would have seen Guishan doing zazen there. I picture Guishan facing out, facing the door. And Deshan, after swaggering around. He stops in his tracks. He looks around and he says, "Nothing. Nothing." And leaves. And at this, Secho comments, completely exposed. This is a point of the koan, is what Secho means when he says completely exposed. At this point, unfortunately, Deshan had not yet become nothing. There is still plenty of Deshan left there. And it made me think of this joke, which probably most of you have heard. I came across it in this wealth of stories called Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart, about a rabbi one day in a frenzy of religious passion rushed in before the ark, fell to his knees, and started beating his breast, crying, "I'm nobody, I'm nobody." The cantor of the synagogue, impressed by this example of spiritual humility, joined the rabbi on his knees. "I'm nobody, I'm nobody." And the custodian, watching from the corner, couldn't restrain himself either. He joined the other two on his knees, calling out, "I'm nobody, I'm nobody." At which point the rabbi nudges the cantor with his elbow, pointed at the custodian, and said, "Look who thinks he's nobody." But that's not how Guishan responded. Guishan responded with silence. There's a Zen saying, great winds are powerless to disturb the water of a deep well. Deshan got to the monastery gate, but then said to himself, "I shouldn't be so rude." Well, a sudden change of heart here? Or is it? So he went back in the hall, in the Buddha hall, this time in the prescribed manner for the meeting, showing the proper etiquette. I did a standing bow at the door, no doubt, and went in. And with Guishan still sitting there, Deshan drew out his kneeling cloth. This is what Zen priests use on ceremonies and to lay down on the floor before being seated. He held up his kneeling cloth, and he started speaking. He said, "Master," and then before he could finish, Guishan made as if to take up his ceremonial whisk. We mentioned the whisk in yesterday's Taisho. And then, just as he was reaching for it, Deshan shouted, "Quit!" and left with a sweep of his sleeves. Wah! Message delivered. And then Secho comments, completely exposed. And then Dashan turned his back on the hall. This is another little fine point of this narrative, because in some schools of Buddhism, you don't, out of respect, you don't turn your back on the Buddha hall. You don't, in fact, you don't turn your back on a Buddha figure. Many years ago, there was a famous Buddhist who came and visited the center. He had been actually the prime minister of Burma, and Roshi Kaplo, Philip Kaplo at the time, had done a pilgrimage to Burma, and had apparently met the prime minister. It was at that time in 1956. Would have been quite a remarkable thing to have this American Buddhist visiting there. And anyway, somehow they had met and kept in contact. And Unu was the name of this prime minister, and he was in the country, and maybe he contacted Roshi and asked if he could visit the center, and it was all set up, and he came, and he did, and he joined us there one day, and remember it was so striking when he was leaving the Zendo. We, out of respect, we waited for him to leave first out of the Zendo, and he just backed up the whole way. He had been up at the front near the altar, and he just backed up, and we learned that that's the custom in Southeast Asia, or at least in Burma, that you never turn your back on the Buddha. But Dashan, he had seen that everything is empty, so what use did he have for custom and convention? This shows the rawness of this galoot. And turned his back and put on his straw sandals, and he was out. And that evening, Guishan asked the head monk, "Where is that new guy?" And the head monk replied, and here you can read between the words here, "When he went out, he turned his back on the Buddha hall, put on his straw sandals, and left." And then Guishan said, "Hereafter, that fellow will go to the summit of an isolated peak, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs." And here again, Secho inserts his own comment, adding frost to snow. There's something that Yasutani Roshi said that he might have been talking directly about Dashan in this initial period after his Satori. He said, "One has to get rid of all concepts until nothing remains. Then one has to rid himself of the idea that there is nothing. It's like doing cleaning with a bucket of water. After you have made everything spotless, you need to dispose of the dirty water that remains." I want to go back and appreciate Guishan, this seasoned master who had this whirlwind come in and just sat there. You can just picture him absolutely still, back straight, shoulders relaxed. Nothing. Nobody. I found a brief passage by one of the great Chinese, another of the great Chinese masters, Hongzhi. Hongzhi said, "Empty and desireless, cold and thin, simple and genuine, this is how to strike down and fold up the remaining habits of many lives. When the stains from old habits are exhausted, the original light appears, blazing through your skull, not admitting any other matters. Vast and spacious, like sky and water merging during autumn, like snow and moon having the same color, this field is without boundary, beyond direction, magnificently one entity without edge or seam." This is the embodiment of this nothing. No self. There is another koan now with Deshan himself, a seasoned master, very advanced in age, where he approaches the dining hall with his bowl in his hand, shuffling along, and Seppo, not as seasoned, maybe himself fresh out of Satori, confronts him, says, "Master, where are you going? There's been no bell, the umpan hasn't sounded." And in response, Deshan just turns and walks back to his room. It's very much admired in Zen, the refinement of someone, not just of deep enlightenment, but of how that enlightenment has become so purified and rendered the person so transparent, so simple, ordinary. This famous Zen saying, nothing distinguishes the enlightened man. Deshan was told, it's early, it's too early yet, the meal's not out, and he just turns and walks back to his room. There was nothing ordinary about Deshan in this koan. He was extraordinary and no doubt saw himself so. Roshi Kapla used to say that awakening is, in a sense, the beginning of our training. It's there where the real work of polishing and purifying begins. It's the point at which we no longer have any excuses for our self-attachment. Having seen through the self, seen through self and other, now we have to put it into action. To put our money where our mouth is and live up to what we've seen and make it true, make it real, and not fall into old patterns of reactivity, pride, and other stains of the mind and the unresolved aspects of personality, the sharp edges and rough corners and sharp edges of, of the personality. This is where ongoing practice for forever is needed to smooth out this roughness, purify it. We once had, when we had finished renovating our Buddha Hall at Arnold Park, we had a dedication ceremony, and another Zen teacher came as a guest, and I was his kind of local attendant. He came with his own entourage, but I was the guy who was supposed to just look after his simple needs while he was at the center, and one of my jobs was to pick him up at the airport and take him back to the airport. And when I was taking him back, this is someone who hadn't seen Philip Kaplow in years, and part of his attendants who came with him, they had also seen him earlier, years earlier. And as we were driving, one of these people who had come with this teacher was sitting in the back seat, and she had then seen the more seasoned Philip Kaplow over the past day and a half. And in the back seat, as I was driving, she exclaimed, "What a change!" And she said, "He used to be so loud." Roshi would have been the first to admit that when he was more unfinished, that he was indeed arrogant, had a lot of arrogance. In this second comment by Secho, after Deshan shouted "Kotz" and stormed out, what does Secho mean here? Completely exposed. Is it the same? Is he referring to the same thing as the first, completely exposed? And if not, what then? What's he referring to? It's another point of the koan, and then this final one, where Guishan says, hereafter that fellow will go to the summit of an isolated peak and so forth, when Secho comments, adding frost to snow. It's another point for the student to demonstrate in Doksan, is to bring that alive and to indicate her or his understanding of what Secho means there. I'm going to close with this words of an anonymous preacher who had been a slave, an ex-slave, now a preacher, and we could take these wherever we are in our practice, whether we're as far along as Deshan or even farther, the way Guishan was, or beginners, or anything. This is what this preacher said. "Lord, we ain't what we want to be. We ain't what we ought to be. We ain't what we gonna be. But thank God we ain't what we was." Stop now and recite the four vows.